but I reach up and grab a loose strand of her hair and tuck it behind her ear. I don't have much to say, but I want to feel her again. I want to feel this overwhelming calm she brings with her when she touches me. She turns her cheek so it's resting in my palm, and she looks like a younger version of herself, open and waiting for me. I tug at her arms, asking her to come closer. I need her closer. She obliges and climbs over the center console and straddles my lap. My body is warm from the afternoon sun, and Tessa's hands are greedily tracing the ink on my stomach over my thin shirt. Each touch of her fingertips sends another steady flicker through me. I tease her tongue with mine, taking everything she'll give me. I wrap my arms around her back, pulling her as close to me as possible. It's still not enough. I need more of her. I can't get enough of this girl. My hands travel up her warm stomach, and we're interrupted by the most obnoxious ringtone. "Another alarm?" I ask her as she digs into her purse. The screen on her ancient phone is small, but big enough for me to see a name flashing across the screen. Noah. Her precious little high school boyfriend is calling her, while she's in my car with her tongue down my throat. She presses ignore and smiles up at me. Really? Guess she's not as innocent as I thought. A good orgasm seemed to pluck out her morals, one moan at a time. It dawns on me that she'll never tell him any of what happened today. Not a word. She's going to kiss me, get out of my car, and go call her preppy little boyfriend the moment she gets into her room. She's going to tell him she loves him. He'll say it back, and she'll smile the way she did when I kissed her. She licks her lips and leans across the center console to kiss me again. No. No. I think I'd better go. I sigh and stare out the windshield.
Harden, I ignored the call, she says, defensive. I'm going to talk to him about all this. I just don't know how or when, but it will be soon, though. I promise.
Well, I was wrong about her morals disappearing, but this is worse than I thought. She spent one afternoon with me, and now she's going to break up with her childhood lover boy in hopes that I'll be his replacement. No, no, no. The air in the car is thickening, clogging my throat, as Tessa waits for my response. Talk to him about what? I ask, knowing I shouldn't feed this puppy more than I already have.
All of this.
Her hand waves around the car, stirring up the thick air, and I'm convinced I'm going to fucking choke on it. What was I thinking doing this shit with her? I should have just fucked her. No cute little lunch debate over ketchup. No talks about our future plans. As women always do, she now wants to be a part of my life. She's her own brand of crazy if she thinks this could actually happen.
Us,
she adds. She's using words like us, and it's fucking terrifying. Us? You're not trying to tell me you're going to break up with him. For me, are you? She feels heavier on my lap now, a solid reminder of why virgins aren't my thing. Even Natalie wasn't a first-timer. She had given her virginity to a boy from her church while experimenting.
You don't want me to?
Tessa frowns in confusion. Christ, this is going downhill fast. No, why would you? I mean, yeah, if you want to dump him, go for it. But don't do it on my behalf.
I thought...
I already told you that I don't date, Teresa. She flinches, hurt by my words. This is messier than I thought it would be. Part of me wants to tell her I don't mean to be a dick, that it's ingrained into every fiber of me to be this way. It's not my fault. Or hers. Except it is my fault. It's my fault that I just don't have the slightest bit of whatever it is that makes people want to pair off and live happily ever after whilst frolicking through wildflower patches. I'm simply not capable.
You're disgusting.
She climbs off of my lap and quickly gathers her phone and bag. Her absence on my lap nags at me. So does the deep grey storm that has brewed in her eyes.
Stay away from me from now on. I mean it, she shouts and runs off.
Natalie's voice saying the exact same words to me, eyes full of tears, blasts through the speakers in my mind. Tessa's eyes are glossy, but she's holding it together for her pride. We're alike in this way. The enormous, irrational amount of pride we both have could be dangerous. Tessa opens the car door and climbs out without even looking back at me. She does her best to slam the door and hurries across the parking lot. I immediately pull out and turn the dial up on my stereo. I need the noise to silence the hurricane gathering in my mind. My hands are itching, my mind racing. Natalie, Teresa, Natalie, Teresa. Natalie standing on the porch at my mum's house in Hampstead, a book bag covered in floral print clutched to her chest, and her bloodshot eyes full of thick tears.
Please, Harden, she cried. I have nowhere to go.
She was begging. A puff of smoke clouded in the cold air in front of her as she spoke. I couldn't bring myself to let her in. I just couldn't. I had heard that her family and church had exiled her, kicking her out of both of her lifelong sanctuaries. She looked so young in that moment. Her blue eyes were shining through the darkness as she waited, hoping I would change my mind. I wouldn't, though. I fucking couldn't. I couldn't let her stay at my house. My mum was barely home, and that would leave her with me all the time. What could I do for her? I didn't want to have anything to do with her, and even if I had, I couldn't really do shit to help her. My dad was a drunk who would wake her as he stumbled into the musty house, its walls stained with cigarette smoke, the odor of which had permanently seeped into the upholstered furniture. Where would she sleep if he suddenly came back? He'd been gone for a few years, but my childish mind believed that he could return. I was a damn fool. Now he is, in fact, back, and he has a nice little family and a big house, and I hate how often this thought crosses my mind. I've already moved to another country to live close to him, and now he's become embedded in my thoughts what feels like all fucking day. A honking noise pulls me back to the present, and I quickly jerk the steering wheel, causing a minivan to honk at me again. My eyes aren't focused. The world outside the windshield is a blur. Blinking a few times, I reach for the volume dial on the stereo. I need to pull off to the side of the road. My chest is aching, a steady, thick pounding of muscle inside of me. My bones are rattling from the force of it. I can feel beads of sweat, tears maybe, soaking my skin. Embarrassed, I wipe at them.
Fuck!
I shout into the thick air. I need air. My throat feels like it's closing as I throw open the door. The cool fall air tunnels through, calming my breathing. Natalie's face is fresh in my mind. Tessa joins her, and the girls are laughing at me, snorting and teasing me. They're mocking the way they have this power over me. Tessa's knowing smile brightens, and Natalie fades out. What the fuck is happening to me? I need to stay away from Tessa, no matter what stupid bet I made or how stupid I'll look when Zed wins. Zed. He's always a factor. I can't stand the thought of him having her. His body, beads of sweat on his skin as he presses his body against hers. I close my eyes and rest my burning cheek against the cool steering wheel. What a goddamn mess I got myself into. When I next go to class, Tessa isn't sitting in her seat. It's empty, along with Landon's. I sit down and pull out my phone. One text from Logan inviting me to a drink during lunch hour. I decline and push my phone back into the pocket of my black jeans. They're a little snug, but it works. My legs are too long to wear loose-fitting pants without looking like a clown. I do have a pen stain, or perhaps it's some sort of makeup that won't wash out, on the sleeve of my white t-shirt. I didn't want to do laundry, and some of the shit women put on their faces has to be biohazardous at best. I'm distracted from the disgusting truth about my hygiene when Tessa comes through the door.
I stare straight at her, willing her eyes to meet mine, as she walks toward the front row. I'm surprised that she didn't pick a new seat. I do believe her hatred toward me is that strong right now. Tess, I whisper across the small space between our seats. She ignores me, but I noticed her shoulders flinch when I said her name. Tess, she swallows, and her chest is moving at an unnaturally slow pace. The tension is clear between us. I can feel it buzzing, radiating from us.
Do not speak to me, Harden.
She squares her shoulders to let me know she means business.
Oh, come on.
I try to cajole her with a smile, but she's not having it. She licks her lips and says,
I mean it, Harden. Leave me alone.
Fine. Have it your way.
If she wants to be difficult, I can be difficult too. Oh, I'm the fucking king of difficult. Landon comes into the conversation, looking like an anxious little puppy.
You okay?
He asks Tessa.
Yeah, I'm fine.
She nods and shifts so more of her back is facing me. The week passes with sleepless nights and irresistible calls from dusty bottles under the sink. It's becoming harder and harder to ignore their siren song. By Friday, I'm fucking exhausted. I look and feel like shit. When I get to literature, Landon is sitting at his desk, and his eyes meet mine immediately.
I need to talk to you,
he insists. I glance around to see who else he could possibly be talking to. No way it's me, but Tessa only now walks through the door, so maybe.
Yes, you,
he says, looking more annoyed than before. I sit down in my seat, ignoring him. I cross my legs under the desk and lean my back against the hard plastic chair.
I wanted to extend an invite for dinner in a few days. Our parents have something to tell you.
He must pick up on his own stupidity, because he corrects himself.
My mom and your dad.
Our parents? Is he fucking demented?
Don't ever say some shit like that again, you prick.
In a move to stand up, Landon pushes his hands against the top of his desk. I fucking dare him.
Leave him alone, Harden!
Tessa yells, and grabs hold of my arms to keep me from hurling myself at Landon. She really doesn't know how to mind her own damn business. I drop my arms. Fuck this. Why did she have to walk up and join us?
You need to mind your own business, Teresa.
Tessa leans into her bestie and whispers something to him. Bestie is such a stupid word, but I bet these two dweebs use it.
He's just an asshole. That pretty much sums it up,
Landon announces with his most charming grin. Tessa's giggling peeves me in the deepest way. She turns to Landon.
I have some good news.
Ugh, she's putting on a show for me, probably thinking I'm too oblivious to catch on to her juvenile antics.
Really? What's that? Noah's coming to visit today, and he'll be here all weekend.
The slow burn of jealousy is making its way through me, stopping to fray each edge of me on its way. With every clap of Tessa's hands, I can feel my smoldering gaze heating her skin, and each watt of brightness that grows in her smile makes my hands twitch on my desk more and more vehemently.
Really? That's great news!
Landon sucks up to Tessa, and neither of them pays any attention to me when I pretend to gag. Chapter 18. As he got to know the girl, his fears began to grow. He had never had much competition when it came to affections of women. His short-lived rendezvous were never challenged by other men. That was until the perfect boy with golden hair came waltzing in with a book full of her secrets. He knew the boy had watched the girl grow up, been alongside her most of the way, and probably knew her better than anyone else. He was easy to hate, but in the end, he realized he wasn't the competition after all. While I walk down the hallway of Tessa's dorm building, I try to shake the thoughts out of my head. I can't help but picture Tessa naked,
underneath her boy toy's body, his cardigan tied around his shoulders as he fucks her. If the thought didn't make me nauseous, I would find this image hilarious. I knock at Tessa's door once before I turn the handle and walk in. It's not locked, which makes it obvious that she and her boyfriend aren't planning anything too wild. She and Noah are sitting on the bed in the dark, and Tessa jumps a little when she sees me, making a space between them.
What are you doing here?
Tessa raises her voice the moment she realizes who it is that has just arrived.
You can't just barge in here.
I give the adorable couple a smile. I'm meeting Steph. I sit down on the edge of Steph's bed, knowing that I'm lying, through my teeth. I turn to Noah, wanting to gauge his annoyance level. Is he easygoing or uptight like Tessa? Tessa's probably going to piss herself the moment I say his name. Hey, Noah. Nice to see you again. I think about shaking his hand. I'm sure he's used to it at the country club he's a member of.
She's with Tristan. Probably already at your house.
She really pushes those words as if she's trying to tell me to leave. Not yet, Blondie. Oh? I play with Tessa's nerves. Are you two coming to the party? That would make it much more fun. I can imagine the boy fitting in well at the frat house. Bro dudes with matching blonde hair would have him doing a keg stand within minutes of his arrival. His pure soul would be tainted, and Teresa would have to find herself another blonde Abercrombie model. Tough life.
No, we aren't. We're trying to watch a movie.
Tessa answers me. Noah moves his hand in the dark, and I cringe as he rests it on Tessa's. I can see her discomfort, even in the darkness. That's too bad. I better go. I turn on my boot, and some of the pressure disappears from my chest. Oh, and Noah. I put a pause between my words and watch Tessa squirm. That's a nice cardigan you're wearing. Tessa looks relieved when she realizes that I'm not going to cause a scene. Thanks. It's from the Gap, he answers me, oblivious that I'm making fun of him. I can see that. You two have fun, I say as I leave the room. My chest burns as I close the door. He's a tool. Chapter 19. Just as his life was beginning to make a little sense, it was shaken again. He thought he was in complete control of himself, of her, of everything. He was resisting the sweet temptation of the bitter liquor. He didn't crave it the way he had until he found himself on the phone with his father, getting a play-by-play of the man's new and better life. When he hung up the phone, he had no other option. He was completely alone with his only friend. The bottle of scotch was nearly empty. It mirrored him in that way. When I get to the Scott house, I park right in the middle of the driveway. I hate this fucking beautiful house. It sits high on a perfectly green lawn. Ken and Karen pay a pretty penny to have their yard groomed. No doubt they pay a pretty penny to have themselves groomed as well. Ken's new soon-to-be wife loves living here, I'm sure. She probably loves spending his money on grooming herself, too. I'm fucking livid. I'm pissed off and not drunk enough to deal with this kind of bullshit. What fucking piece of shit father tells his only son he's getting married to another woman when you're just now getting to know his ass? This is exactly why I didn't want anything to fucking do with him. I'm pissed that I only had a quarter of a bottle of liquor in my cabinet. My head is pounding, my throat is dry, and I'm craving the burn of scotch. Ken Scott has fine bottles of scotch, gifted to him from colleagues in sweater vests who have just returned from their vacations in Scotland. My shitty father is getting remarried, and he says it like this. Karen and I are to be wed. Soon. Very soon. To be wed? What the fuck kind of stilted ass expression is that? And during a fucking telephone conversation? We are to be wed, I repeat, as I take his porch stairs in two long strides. The man has so much fucking topiary it makes me feel like I'm lost in the fucking Wonka jungle or Wonka factory thing,
Hell, whatever it is, it's hideous. First and foremost, I need more scotch.
I'm all out!
I exclaim, my voice leaping out into the darkness. I'm in a pickle here. I'm drunk, but not as drunk as I want to be. I need more liquor. Ken has more liquor. He always has. I knock on the door and no one answers. The man's house is too damn big. Stupid brick showy model home.
Hello!
I shout into the abyss of a dark yard, with loud crickets shouting back at me. The neighbours all have their porch lights on, and every house has an SUV parked in front, the bumpers littered with WCU bumper stickers. All of the overpaid, highbrow scholars live on this street. I pull my grey beanie down over my hair, hoping it makes me look even more dangerous to the neighbours than usual. Landon opens the door before I even realise that I'm pounding my fist against the wood. My knuckles are barely healed. The skin never really has a chance to heal before I rip it open time after time.
Harden?
His voice is low, like I've woken him up.
No,
I say, passing him in the foyer. I walk straight to the kitchen and raise my voice so he can hear me as he follows. My eyes stop for a beat on their couch. Its frilly, floral, vomit-covered mass bothers me.
It's someone else who looks identical to him, only this model thinks you're an even bigger prick than the other one does.
I open a cabinet in the kitchen to begin my search. My sperm donor, that is to say, Ken, since becoming sober has thrown out most of his liquor, but I know he kept at least one rare bottle of scotch. Maybe it's a reminder, maybe it's a temptation. But he cherishes it. Fucking treasures it, even. I've heard him talk more about that stupid bottle, and with more pleasure, than he talks about his own son since I've been here. He always keeps it in a different spot. I don't know if he hides it from himself, or if he uses it as a constant marker of his sobriety. Either way, it's mine now.
They aren't here. My mom and Ken went out of town for the weekend.
Landon explains what I already know. I stay quiet, not wanting to converse with my soon-to-be stepbrother. The thought makes me gag. I'm not meant to have family. No siblings looking out for me or vice versa. I'm meant to be alone and take care of myself. I keep searching, now moving into Ken and Karen's bedroom. The room is enormous, big enough for three king-size beds like the four-poster they have in the center of the room. Their dresser, nightstands, and bed are all a dark cherry wood, the same as Ken's desk in his office. Anal compulsive asshat. The room is hideous and it looks like shit, so I hope Ken and Karen are happy in here with their matching furniture and pristine life. I pull the string in the closet to turn on the light and brush my hand across the shelves. After feeling around some dust and a box, my fingers hit glass. Jackpot. I carefully bring the bottle down and wipe the thin layer of dust that's gathered since Ken's last public showing. Immediately I twist the top off, feeling deep satisfaction as the plastic tears, ruining the perfect seal. The scotch is hot on my tongue, and it tingles a small cut on the inside of my cheek. I savour the thick, slow burn of the smooth liquor. Ken Scott has always loved his scotch, and he's a true aficionado of the beverage. The taste is incredible. So smooth, yet with such a rich flavour. I personally think scotch is just a tad pretentious, and was disappointed to find out that it's the only whisky that comes from Scotland. Showy bastards. Still, I love the taste. One trait I got from Ken's short list of actual contributions to my existence. Half of the bottle is gone now. My head is spinning, and I think I should finish it off. Why not? My dad doesn't deserve it. He doesn't even drink anymore. When he chose to stop holding hands with the devil, he lost the right to possess such an exquisite bottle. Besides, he already has enough precious, perfect things. Like his new son, for example, who right now seems to think he can stop me from my mission to make his new daddy feel as shitty as I feel. Ken has a perfect, soon-to-be wife, who keeps his pantry and stomach full.
She doesn't have to work an 8-hour shift, then turn around and run off to another job. She doesn't have to line up the bills on their kitchen table that's missing a leg and choose the one she's not going to have the money to pay this month. The times I talk to him, he seems to think we were fine back in Hampstead, and I blame a fraction of that illusion on my mum, whose pride was bigger than her brain. His house is clean, and even his fridge is clean. No fingerprints are visible on the stainless steel. I lick my fingers and drag them down the metal. Landon scoffs, cursing from behind me.
"Did you drink that entire bottle?"
he asks. His eyes are wide as he stares at the bottle swinging in my hand.
"No, there's still half left. Want some?"
I ask him. He backs away into the dining room, his hands raised, and I follow him.
"No."
Perfect son who doesn't drink. How sweet.
"I thought you weren't drinking anymore," he says.
I turn to him, holding on to a big cabinet filled with expensive, shiny sets of dishes in order to keep myself from falling down. What the fuck does he know about my drinking? My fingers dig into the wood.
"Why would you say that?"
He realizes that he wasn't supposed to say anything like that in front of the poor, damaged child, and his eyes widen.
"I just meant..."
He attempts to bullshit me.
"Stop!"
I hold up the hand with the bottle, and he steps backward into the living room from the dining room. He's not going to stop fucking talking. He's going to push and push. I don't have any control over him, over anything that's happening right now. My shitty dad is getting fucking married. I'm drunk and pissed off, and this motherfucker doesn't know when to stop pushing me. My fingers wrap around the corners of the china cabinet next to me. He doesn't know when to stop.
"Your dad said..."
And now it's my turn to push. Before he can finish his sentence, I push the cabinets over. I use extra force, dropping the bottle in the process. Landon yells something, but I can't hear him over the sound of shattering china.
"Get out! You need to leave!"
Landon shouts. I bend down and grab the bottle from the mess of broken glass, splintered wood, and slices and fragments of white and blue dishes. I cut the tip of my finger and lick away the blood while making sure the scotch bottle is properly closed.
"Tessa would be so impressed by this!"
I hear his voice as I pull open the back door.
Tessa?
I want to ask him what the fuck Tessa has to do with any of this, but I don't want to give him the satisfaction of knowing he can use her as leverage over me. For whatever reason, he thinks tossing her name out there will make me come down and give a fuck, and I won't let him think he's right. I ignore him, even though I don't want to, and I walk out onto the back deck. The air is warm but calm. The beginning of fall is here, and the summer nights will soon start to turn chilly, and then chilly will turn into freezing. The next time I fuck up, I'm moving somewhere warm.
"Tessa would be so impressed,"
I say aloud, mocking Landon's voice. He was trying to be a smartass, letting me know that she wouldn't approve of my mess-making and temper tantrum.
"Tessa, Tessa, Tessa!"
I shout into the darkness. Even this yard is perfect. It's nearly as big as an American football field, and lined with tall trees, keeping the property in perfect shade during the day, and a black sheet of darkness at night. My head is spinning, and the silence isn't helping. I take another swig. A few minutes later, the creak of the screen door has me leaping to my feet. Tessa is standing in the doorway in front of Landon. She walks toward me, and with every step, the bottle in my hand feels heavier. Her light eyes are pinned on mine. Is she real? Her blonde hair is so shiny under the patio lights. She's glowing, frowning, but radiant. Is she really there? I think so. Unless this bottle is laced with some hallucinogen, she must be.
"How did you get here?"
I ask her. I follow her eyes to Landon and freeze. That fucker.
"Landon, he..."
she begins.
"You fucking called her!"
Landon ignores me, walks through the doorway, and closes the screen door behind him.
Tessa points a finger at me.
You leave him alone, Harden. He's worried about you,
she says, defending her friend. The perfect brother has the perfect friend. She's generally soft-spoken, but not when she's mad. Her eyes are so pretty, too perfect for such a soft face. I can't keep staring at her. She's giving me a headache. I have to guess what she's thinking, and I've had a long enough night already. I sit down at the patio table and gesture for her to take a seat across from me. When she sits down, I take another drink and she stares, pure judgment in her eyes. I slam the heavy bottle down on the glass table and she jumps out of her seat. She should leave. She shouldn't be here. Landon should never have called her and told her to come here. Why would she come anyway? Her boyfriend is in town this weekend, and I'm sure he's penciled in for cuddle time. The thought makes me cringe. Landon had no fucking right calling her to come here. Ah, aren't you two something? You're both so predictable. Poor Harden is upset, so you gang up on me and try to make me feel bad for breaking some shitty china. I smile at her, letting her know I'm playing the villain tonight.
I thought you didn't drink, she says.
It's more a question than a statement. She's trying to figure out just who I am. I confuse her, and she hates it. I don't, until now, I guess. Don't try to patronize me. You're no better than me. I point a finger at her, using her old scolding technique. She doesn't look fazed by my move. I take another drink.
I never said I was better than you. I just want to know what made you start drinking now.
I'll never understand what makes this girl think she can ask people whatever the hell she wants. Boundaries. She has none.
What does it matter to you? Where's your boyfriend?
I burn the question into her. She looks away, unable to keep up with my stare.
He's back in my room. I just want to help you, Harden.
Tessa's hand reaches for mine, and I flinch away before she can touch me. What is she doing? This must be some sick joke. Landon must have told her to come here and be all gentle, tame the lion bullshit. She wouldn't touch me for no reason.
Help me, I laugh. If you want to help me, then leave.
I wave the bottle in my hand toward the door.
Why won't you just tell me what's going on?
She pushes. I knew she would. Her hair is down, resting over her shoulders in waves. She's wearing casual clothes, looking younger than ever. Her eyes release mine, and she looks down at her hands on her lap. Out of habit, I pull the hat off my head and run my hand through my hair. I can smell the scotch seeping from my pores, and I can hear Tessa's heavy breaths coming out in long draws. I match my breathing to hers, and then wonder what the fuck I'm doing. I would rather get her talking than sit here in tense silence.
My father decided to tell me just now that he is marrying Karen, and the wedding's next month. He should have told me long ago, and not over the phone. I'm sure perfect little Landon's known for a while.
Tessa's eyes dart to me, and she looks a little surprised that I just spoke to her so candidly. I hadn't planned to go into that much detail. I blame the scotch.
I'm sure he had his reasons not to tell you,
she says, defending him. Of course she does. Ken Scott is like her, polished and pretty and always the good guy.
You don't know him. He doesn't give a shit about me. You know how many times I've talked to him in the last year. Maybe 10. All he cares about is his big house, his new soon-to-be wife, and his new perfect son.
I take a drink from the bottle and wipe my lips with the back of my hand.
You should see the dump that my mum lives in England. She says she likes it there, but I know she doesn't. It's smaller than my dad's bedroom here. My mum practically forced me to come here for university, to be closer to him. And we see how that worked out.
How old were you when he left?
Tessa asks. I can't tell if she's being nosy, pitying me, or just wondering. I hesitate before answering.
10. But even before he left, he was never around. He was at a different bar every night. Now he's Mr. Perfect and he has all this shit.
I gesture toward the house. Pots of bright flowers line the ledge of the deck, adding to the scenery.
I'm sorry that he left you guys, but...
No, I don't need your pity.
I stop her there. She's always making excuse after excuse for everyone around her. It's fucking frustrating. She doesn't know my father. She didn't have to put up with his shit until she didn't anymore, but then missed it when he was gone.
It's not pity. I'm just trying to...
Judge me?
Trying to what?
I push her to respond.
Help you. Be here for you.
It sounds nice when she says it. Too bad she doesn't know anything about me. She doesn't know who she's trying to help. She needs to understand that I'm not fixable and she's wasting her time here. She needs to leave and never speak to me again.
You are so pathetic. Don't you see that I don't want you here? I don't want you to be here for me. Just because I messed around with you doesn't mean I want anything to do with you. Yet here you are, leaving your nice boyfriend, who can actually stand to be around you, to come here and try to help me.
That, Teresa, is the definition of pathetic, I say, watching her grey eyes turn to stone.
You don't mean that.
She doesn't know me, though she can read me well. I deliver the final blow.
I do, though. Go home.
I lift the bottle in victory and open my mouth. Suddenly, the bottle is snatched from my grip and tossed across the yard.
What the hell?
I shout at her. Is she mad? Tossing a valuable bottle of scotch across a lawn like that? I look back and forth between her figure striding to the patio door and the bottle, then follow her after grabbing the bottle and leaving it on the side of the deck near the table. I have to catch my balance, but I manage to step in front of her.
Where are you going?
I look down at her, stopping her from entering the house. The porch light catches her eyelashes in a way that makes it look like they're brushing her cheekbones. I stare at her as she stares at her feet.
I'm going to help Landon clean up the mess you made, and then I'm going home.
Her voice is full of conviction and leaves no room for arguing, except that I'm a master of the art of finding a small space, a crevice, no matter how tiny, to argue my way into.
Why would you help him?
He betrayed me by calling her in the first place, and now she's leaving me to help him.
Because he, unlike you,
her voice is low, steady and strong,
deserves someone to help him,
she says. I feel the impact of her words sinking into my chest as she stares into my eyes, challenging me. She's right. He's the guy everyone wants to be around. He doesn't break shit and throw a fit when he gets bad news. He deserves her time and attention, just like he deserves to walk into that big house and be welcomed warmly and go into his own room. He deserves a home-cooked meal. He shouldn't have to eat takeout in an empty room inside a house full of strangers who all secretly hate him. She's right about that, and that's why I let her walk past me and back into the house without another word. The way she looked at me as she walked by is burning through my mind, playing on repeat over and over. I pull out my phone and scroll through a few pictures I've taken of her, one while walking to the stream. Her hair was so blonde under the sun, and her skin was glowing. She was quiet, nervous maybe, but she looks peaceful in the photo. She really is beautiful. Why would she want to help me? What all did Landon tell her about my drinking? I pull my beanie back on, and after a few minutes I can't help but go inside. My eyes are burning and my head is pounding as I open the door.
Tessa, can I talk to you, please?
I immediately ask. Landon is crouched over, dropping broken pieces of china into a plastic bin. Tessa nods, and I stare at her face. Then my eyes move farther down her body, stopping at her bloody finger, which she's holding under the sink faucet. I cross the kitchen in only a few steps.
Are you okay? What happened?
It's nothing,
Just a little glass, she says. The cut looks small, but I can't get a good look at it. I reach for her hand and pull it from the water. The cut is about half an inch long and a quarter inch deep. She'll be okay. She just needs a bandage. Her hand feels so light in mine, so warm, and I feel my breathing slow as I hold her. I drop her hand and she lets out a deep breath.
Where are the band-aids?
I ask Landon.
Bathroom.
He's annoyed with me. I can tell by his tone. I find the small box of bandages easily in the cabinet. I grab the antibacterial cream from the bottom shelf and return to the kitchen. I take Tessa's hand in mine for the second time and squeeze the cream onto the tip of her finger. She's watching me carefully. Unsure what to think, maybe? Band-aids remind me of my mum and that fucked-up night a long time ago. And I blink away the memory as I wrap the bandage around Tessa's finger.
Can I talk to you? Please?
I ask Tessa for the second time. She nods, and I wrap my fingers around her wrist, leading her to the back patio again. We have more privacy there. Landon won't be listening in. When we reach the table, I let go of Tessa's wrist and pull the chair out for her. It's the least I can do, I suppose. My hand feels cold, and the blood is no longer pumping behind my ears. I feel calm and cool. I grab another chair and drag it across the concrete side of the patio. When I sit down across from her, my knees almost touch hers.
What could you possibly want to talk about, Harden?
Tessa asks, sounding completely uninterested. I pull the hat from my head and toss it onto the table between us. My fingers find my hair. I feel like a complete bastard for being such an asshole a few minutes ago. I want her to know that I'm not her charity case, her broken little doll. But now that I'm coming down from my adrenaline high, I'm starting to see what a complete dick I am. I'm sorry, I say quietly. The words settle in the static between us, and she stays silent.
Did you hear me?
Yeah, I heard you,
she barks at me. Her chin is lifted in the most defiant way. She's pissed. She's pissed. I'm fucking pissed. She came here, meddled in my family drama, and then doesn't accept my apology. I reach down for the bottle and open the top. She glares at me as the liquor slides down my throat.
You're so damned difficult to deal with.
I'm difficult? You have to be kidding me. What do you expect me to do, Harden? You're cruel to me. So cruel.
Her lips tremble and her eyes begin to water. She tries to square her shoulders, but they slump. She's more than upset over this. I whisper my response.
I don't mean to be.
Yes, you do. And you know it. You do it purposefully. I've never been treated this poorly by anyone in my entire life.
That can't be true. I'm not even that mean to her. She hasn't dealt with shit in her life if this is the worst she's been treated.
Then why do you keep coming around?
Why not just give up?
I ask her. If I'm that bad, why doesn't she just quit trying to be with me? I ignore the part of my brain that's questioning how I would feel if she stopped trying.
If I don't know, but I can assure you that after tonight, I'm not going to try anymore. I'm going to drop literature and just take it next semester,
she tells me. Her arms are crossed in her lap, and the wind is blowing her hair behind her shoulders. I wonder if she's cold. I don't want her to drop the class. It's the only regularly scheduled time I have with her.
Don't. Please don't do that.
Why would you care? You don't want to be forced to be around someone as pathetic as me, right?
I hear pain behind her words, but I don't know her well enough to judge if it's authentic. I wish I did. I wonder how many people actually know her. The real her. I'm talking about the one whose brows crinkle before she smiles. The one who maybe doesn't have her shit figured out the way her mum thinks she does.
I didn't mean that. I'm the pathetic one.
I sigh and lean back in my chair. Her eyes pierce mine.
Well, I won't argue with that, she says.
her lips pressed into a hard line. She reaches for the bottle, but I'm faster than her this time.
So you're the only one who can get drunk?
She looks at me, her eyes focusing on the ring in my brow. I thought you were going to toss it again. I hand it to her. I don't like her drinking, but she's ready for a fight over it, and I'm not. I just want her to stay here. I like how quiet it is when she's around. She gags the moment she tastes the scotch.
How often do you drink? You implied before that it was never.
She's grilling me. Before tonight, it's been about 6 months. 6 months down the drain. Way to fucking go, Harden.
Well, you shouldn't drink at all. It makes you an even worse person than usual,
she says in a joking way, but I know she's serious. You think I'm a bad person? I don't look up from the ground while I wait for her answer. She's going to say yes, just like everyone else would.
Yes.
I'm not surprised by her answer, but I couldn't help but hope for her to say no. I'm not. Well, maybe I am. I want you to, I begin. I'm not that bad of a person, am I? I could be better, for her, if she asked me to. I look at her, taking in the way her lips are trembling, waiting for me to finish my jumbled thought. I want to be good. I want her to think I'm good.
You want me to what?
She asks impatiently. She pushes the bottle into my hands, and I sit it down on the table without taking a drink. How do I answer that without sounding pathetic? I can stop drinking. I can be nicer to people, or just her. Nothing. I can't find the right words for her.
I should go.
She stands to her feet and rushes away from me. She's moving so fast, and I don't want her to leave. I'll try harder.
Don't go!
I follow her. When she stops, her face is so close to mine that I can taste the faint trace of scotch on her breath.
Why not? Do you have more insults to throw in my face?
She shouts, her words hitting me harder than usual. She turns away from me again, and I reach for her. I wrap my hand around her arm and pull her back.
Don't turn your back on me!
I yell at her. She doesn't get to come here and stir shit up and walk away. I'm fucking sick of people doing that shit to me.
I should have turned my back on you a long time ago.
Tessa's hands push against my chest.
I don't know why I'm even here. I came all the way here the second Landon called me.
She's screaming at me now. Her face is red and her lips are moving so fast. Her tongue darts out to wet them so she can finish her angry rant.
I left my boyfriend, who, like you said, is the only one who can stand to be around me, to come here for you.
Her words sink into me, one by one. She did leave her boyfriend to come here. She has no other reason to be here aside from me. Maybe I'm not as bad as I thought, and maybe she sees that in me.
You know what? You're right, Harden. I am pathetic. I'm pathetic for coming here. I'm pathetic for even trying.
I close the space between us without another thought and press my mouth to hers. She pushes at my chest, fighting me, but I can feel her body relaxing in my arms.
Kiss me, Tessa,
I beg her. I need her.
Please, just kiss me. I need you.
I try once more, for the last time, to get her to kiss me. My tongue touches her closed lips and they part. She gives in to me all at once, willingly and wholly. She leans into me, sighing against my breath, and I bring my hands to both of her cheeks, cupping her face, devouring the taste of her. My tongue traces her bottom lip, and she shivers. I wrap my arms around her, anchoring myself to her steadiness. I hear a noise from the house, and Tessa pulls away. I don't kiss her again, but I keep my arms wrapped around her.
Harden, I really have to go. We can't keep doing this. It's not good for either of us,
she says. She's lying to herself. We can figure this out.
Yes, we can keep going,
I assure her. I don't know where this sudden bloom of hope has come from, but it feels nice here, settled in my chest.
No, we can't. You hate me, and I don't want to be your punching bag anymore. You confuse me. One minute you're telling me how much you can't stand me, or humiliating me after my most intimate experience.
I did that. I fucked up. I need to explain what happened, and that sometimes I fuck things up on purpose. I've always been like this. My gran once tried to have a birthday party for me when I was 12. She sent out invitations and ordered a special cake. On the day of the party, I told everyone it was cancelled and sulked in my room the entire day. I didn't touch that cake. I just fuck things up sometimes. But I can find a way to stop doing that. If it means I get to kiss Tessa, to feel her losing herself in me again, I'll do anything. I try to interrupt her, but she stops me by pressing her index finger to my lips. If she didn't have a band-aid on it, I would be kissing her cut.
Then the next minute you're kissing me and telling me you need me. I don't like who I am when I'm with you, and I hate the way I feel after you say terrible things to me.
Who are you when you're with me? I ask her. I like who she is. She's a better person than most.
Someone I don't want to be. Someone who cheats on her boyfriend and cries constantly.
Her voice cracks. She's ashamed of the person she becomes when she's around me. That makes me feel like shit. I want her to be happy about spending time with me. I want her to crave me the same irresistible way that I do her. You know who I think you are when you're with me? I ask her. My thumb traces the line of her jaw, and her eyes flutter closed under my touch.
Who?
She whispers, her lips barely moving. The air between us is calm now as she awaits my answer. I answer truthfully.
Yourself. I think this is the real you, and that you're just too busy caring what everyone else thinks about you to realize it.
And I know what I did to you after I fingered you. She cringes at my blunt word choice.
Sorry.
After our experience. I know it was wrong. I felt terrible after you got out of my car.
I doubt that.
She rolls her eyes, dismissing me. It's true. I swear it. I know you think I'm a bad person, but you make me... I can't finish. She's digging into me, deeper and deeper, and it's terrifying.
Never mind. Finish that sentence, Harden, or I'm leaving right now.
I can tell she means it. She waits, her hand on her hip and her eyes stone cold for me.
You make me want to be good for you. I want to be good for you, Tess.
I breathe, and she gasps. Chapter 20. When she started pressuring him for labels and proofs of commitment, he panicked. He felt like a wild animal being cornered and trapped. His cage was honesty, and she threatened to lock him away without a key. He couldn't lose her, but with each day it grew harder to keep her. She turned the tables on him, questioning things he thought she would never catch on to. When she wanted more, she demanded it, taking nothing but yes for an answer. But when he wanted more, she pushed against it, excuse after excuse.
This could never work, Harden. We're so different. First off, you don't date, remember?
She fires at me. She steps away from me, and I hope she doesn't try to leave my father's house. It feels like all we talk about anymore is the future. Marriage, living together, breaking up, not breaking up. Tessa feels pressure to plan her whole life, but I don't. At this point, I think it's common knowledge that I don't handle this type of pressure well. Regardless, she keeps pushing for me to be better and better for her.
We aren't that different. We like the same things. We both love books, for example, I tell her.
I always have to defend myself to her.
You don't date,
she mocks me.
I know, but we could be friends.
Friends? Really, Harden? Frustration glows in her eyes.
I thought you said we couldn't be friends, and I won't be friends with you.
I know what you mean by that. You want all the benefits of being a boyfriend without actually having to commit.
I let go of her body and lose my footing. I quickly balance myself. Why is that so bad? Why do you need the label? I'm thankful for the space between us and the fresh, scotch-free air.
Because, Harden, even though I haven't really had a lot of restraint lately, I do have self-respect. I will not be your plaything, especially when it involves being treated like dirt.
Exasperated, she throws her hands into the air.
And besides, I'm already taken, Harden.
She's using that bloke as an excuse.
Oh, come on. Who is she trying to kid here?
And yet look where you are right now, I say dryly. She's dangling her boyfriend over my head, taunting me with him and complaining when I do the same with Molly. She sees no double standard here, and the liquor is making it seem even worse tonight. I'm smart enough to know this, but dumb enough to stop myself from being a dick. I'm also liquored up enough to not give a fuck about much of anything. I shattered my father's dining room into tiny pieces. Her mouth twists into a menacing frown, teeth bared and all.
I love him, and he loves me.
Her words slice at my chest. The last ones hit the bone. I move away from her and knock into the chair. Fuck my lack of balance.
Don't say that to me.
I raise a hand as if it could guard me from her words. She doesn't back down. She's full-fledged pissed the fuck off and fully intending to go straight for the throat here.
You're only saying this because you're drunk. Tomorrow you'll be back to hating me.
Hating her?
Hating her?
As if I could possibly hate her. I back away in frustration and try to focus on how green the trees are here because of all the rain.
I don't hate you, I finally say. If you can look me in the eyes and tell me that you want me to leave you alone and never speak to you again, I will listen.
I don't want to hear her say these words. They would kill me. But if she felt that way, if she wanted me to back off, I'd back off.
I swear, from this point on, I will never come near you again.
Just say the words. I try to imagine my life if she left. She would take with her all the color I've worked on painting into my life. Before she can answer, I continue.
Tell me, Tessa. Tell me that you never want to see me again.
I can't imagine it. I step even closer and reach out to run my fingers over her bare arms. Goose flesh rises on her skin, and her lips part. I lean closer and whisper,
Tell me you never want to feel my touch again.
I press my fingers to her neck and gently drag the tips down the length of it, then along her collarbone. She's practically heaving now, unable to speak. I lean even closer, my face barely an inch away from hers. I can feel the electricity under her skin. The faint hum distracts us both.
That you never want me to kiss you again.
I lower my voice, and she trembles.
Tell me, Teresa.
I push for the words that I don't want to come from her lips. I barely hear her when she says my name, but I feel her breath puff against my lips.
You can't resist me, Tessa, just as I can't resist you.
She looks hesitant, but not appalled by this statement.
Stay with me tonight,